It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 280 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I have a special interview with Zach Kaplan, creator and scripter for Eclipse, a series that comes through Top Cow and Image Comics, which I find really fascinating, a great mashup of sci-fi and murder mystery in the first arc, and he's got more story to tell as he moves forward. We discuss his movement from fan to creator of comics, as well as what kinds of things he has in store for us. If you haven't gotten this book, I highly recommend it. I got the chance to meet him at C2E2, which was a great convention this year. Zach has a lot of good things to say about the industry, as well as storytelling, so I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome to the podcast Zach Kaplan, creator of a really great series that I came across at the recent C2E2 convention called Eclipse. How you doing today, Zach?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
It's good to talk with you about this book. I was just, before we started to record, was grieving about the fact that I got your trade, which collects issues 1-4, but I didn't go back to get issues 5 and 6, which are also out. So guess who's going to Comixology right as soon as we get done here. So, and not only that, you got another issue coming out, too, in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, seven's coming out in a couple of weeks. And then 8 will finish up the arc 2, which we're on. So
very cool. I like the book a lot.
And thank
so
you.
I want to get into the series, but I want to also address, there's a foreword. You've collected issues 1-4 in what's called Volume 1, and you wrote like a foreword or an introduction in there. There's a couple of things in there that I thought we should touch on so people get to know a little bit more about you. It says, right, it says, "Dear readers, Eclipse is my first comic book." Right off
That's
the
right.
bat, that strikes me, because this book doesn't read like your first comic book, I've got to say.
Well, thank you.
It really reads very strongly. The pacing's good. The marriage of the illustration along with the script is really strong. And I got such a huge kick out. But then I got to get to the second paragraph. This is where things get interesting. It says, 8 years ago, I dreamed of writing a comic book. I was also working a graveyard shift as a poker dealer.
Yeah.
I toiled at night and slept during the day. I had studied writing in school, but not yet found success. I was living a lifestyle different than most. I was disconnected from my friends and family. Looking back, I can say my life was facing darkness. But I've always tried to see the bright side of things, which I got a huge kick of. And then you say something, I think, that summarizes the whole book. It says, and that's what Eclipse is really about to me, being hopeful in dark times, which I kind of like. Now,
yeah.
This is the perfect intro into, give us like the, what I always call the TV guide version of what the series is about, what's going on, what kind of story is it?
Eclipse is a story that takes place in a world where the sun will burn you alive if you go outside. Something mysterious has happened to our sun. It has turned into a monster and people can't go outside anymore. So they sleep during the day. They work at night. It's a nocturnal society. And then there's a killer who's going around killing people using the sunlight, and it's up to the hero to stop him. And the hero is an ordinary blue-collared guy. He's a cynical kind of man, and he works kind of a graveyard shift in this world, putting on a protective suit to go help maintain the city's infrastructure. He's a bit of a solar engineer, and he gets pulled into the thriller mystery of it all, and that's Eclipse.
So his name is David Bax Baxter. Is that what his name is?
Yep, that's right. And they nicknamed him Bax.
And he works with a police detective named James Everly.
Yes.
Okay. I just want to get everybody up to speed when we talk about the story, all this good stuff about it. I've got to ask, though, you've got a really unique sci-fi concept, and yet you're having sort of a murder mystery, which is a great staple in writing in this process. And what happens is you show things from a different perspective, because life is a very different thing in your comic than it is in the way we know it. Where did you get the concept for this? How did this come about?
Well, yeah, I touched on it a little bit in the foreword, but I was working a graveyard shift as a poker dealer, and I would drive home at sunrise. So it would basically just be me in the empty streets at that hour where the sun was out, but everybody was inside. And that was kind of the kernel that got stuck in my head of thinking about a world where everyone's hiding from the sun or unable to go out. And would that be because the sun is dangerous? And what would it feel to be the only one outside in the sun if everybody else was unable to go out in the sun? But I guess what also crept into the story was all sorts of feelings of isolation and feelings of disconnection. And what does it mean to be disconnected from society and from the rest of the world? And how does the city handle this kind of situation of not being able to go out into the sunlight? And what the different human responses of responding cynically or withdrawn or out for yourself or helping others. And so it all kind of came out in there.
Because, you know, Earth is like an alien world in this book.
Yeah. Yeah. We're collaborating with the artists and everything. That was what we were going for. We wanted the protective suits to feel almost like astronauts. We looked at that so that people would have that idea in the back of their head of this guy's putting on an almost astronaut or spaceman suit just to go outside. Mm-hmm. And we worked a lot, the artists, Giovanni and Chris, to capture the heat and the sun-scorched landscape, and yeah, we wanted it to feel alien for sure.
So how did you come up with the sci-fi concept of having the sun being so damaging to people?
I don't know. It started with the world, and it started with the idea of people couldn't go outside, and would the sun be dangerous? And I don't know. You know, sometimes these ideas just hit you. It just was an idea that I really loved, and I loved it in the comic book medium, this idea that you'd watch an artist draw a ray of light on the page and that ray of light suddenly became deadly. And yeah, I couldn't tell you where exactly the idea came from, but thinking about the sun as the monster. And then I've always liked mashing up genres. I've always liked stories that have more than one kind of genre going on, which was why it wasn't just about survival. I also wanted to look at the classic detective killer thriller and the murder mystery of it all.
Well, it's really interesting because, well, I've got to ask you then, too. Have you always been a fan of comics?
Yeah, I grew up reading comics. And when I was younger, I was reading X-Men, Spider-Man, a lot of superhero stuff. That was all fun stuff as a kid. But then kind of when I got into my young adulthood, my early 20s, I started to discover other comics that were not superhero. Warren Ellis, Greg Rucka, Brian K. Vaughan, and started to go, wow, comics can be anything. And I think that was the switch for me when I realized that the medium was maturing in a way that allowed it to tackle any story. That was when I kind of said, oh, I would love to do this. And I've been a fan ever since.
Because I help out with independent comics as well and as doing the podcast and writing and stuff like that. But
yeah,
I'm always kind of fascinated how someone makes the leap from comics fan to comics creator. How did you go about that process? Did you study how comics are written? Was it just something that came naturally to you? How did that happen?
I've wanted to be a writer forever. And I studied playwriting in college. I went back to film school and studied writing for film and TV. And I've pursued a lot of film and TV stuff, a lot of stuff in development, collaborating with producers, but nothing that's ever been produced. But I've been living in that world, so I've been writing stories a long time. I'd always liked the idea of making the transition, but several years ago I started pitching, and I'd pitch ideas to different companies, different publishers, and nothing stuck and just kept trying, and I finally got one through. And everybody asked me what it is, and I couldn't tell you. I think it's a real mix of timing and luck and opportunity, and you keep banging ahead and modifying your pitches and your stories and trying to find something that's going to capture something special, and then you never know until it gets through. But Eclipse was that idea for me, and I had read comics a long time, but I've definitely gotten a really wonderful education learning how to write a comic just by doing it. And I've read a few books on it and tried to study what's out there, but at the core, nothing is a better teacher than the experience of doing it. And I've already picked up so much just getting into the second arc of Eclipse.
Has it changed how you look at comics? I mean, can you read the comic the same as you used to?
No, not at all. No, I can't. I don't know. I can't imagine someone like yourself, too, who's been analyzing them for so long. And yeah, I'm always thinking about paneling and pacing and dialogue and character and everything I'm analyzing. I mean, the same has been ruined for me for film and TV too. Mm-hmm. It's a special story in any medium that makes me forget myself and lose myself and actually get to the end and go, wow, I was just reading that. I have to go back and analyze it because that one just got me. Mm-hmm. That's a special comic for sure.
It's funny because I have a friend who writes novelizations of TV shows. And I was talking to him about that. He watches a TV show, but he can't really watch it because he's looking at it to see where there are little angles that he could play on if they wanted him to do a novelization or like a spinoff.
Right.
So he can't really watch a show anymore. He's too busy trying to think of his work and how he could turn that into a novel or something.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. But on the other hand, you probably understand comics better than most people do. Most people look at a comic and they just kind of go, oh, comic, open it up and look at it. But you understand because you've had to put the team together and make this thing happen. How did you do that? Did you do that online? Usually people go through like Facebook or someplace like
I was fortunate enough to land this idea with Top Cow. And Top Cow is well known. It's Mark Silvestri's company. He's one of the founders of Image. Witchblade, Darkness, they've done a lot of comics in that world. Matt Hawkins is the president. He's been writing comics for 8 years. He's got a large presence of books. And so they took on the idea and they teamed me up with artists. So they had a list of different artists that they had their eye on. And Giovanni Timpano was on the list and I was immediately drawn to his work. And actually, he wasn't available for 5 months. And once we approached him, he said, I'd love to do it, but you have to wait if you want me. And I made the choice to wait for him, which was one of the best choices for the book because he's amazing.
I have to say, the artwork is just spectacular.
He's killer. Wait until you get to 5, 6, and 7 coming out. He just gets better and better. It's funny because I brought a very cinematic style to the whole thing. I'm writing it and we open on Times Square and there's 100 people and there's billboards and all these details of world building. And you get some writers who would just want to phone it in. But Giovanni had actually never, I don't think, worked on a creator-owned idea where he's world-building. He came from doing a lot of IDW stuff, Dynamite stuff, that kind of Lone Ranger, Shadow, Transformers, that kind of thing. So he was very excited to build the world, too, and he poured his heart and soul into it. So you can flip to the first page of Volume 1, and there's just this super detailed page that kind of reminds people of Jeff Darrow or Mobius. Yeah. And that level of detail has become almost a gimmick for the book because people have responded so much to it. So I'd say every issue we are trying to tackle some sort of a large spread, super detailed scene just to capture the world and let Gio show off his stuff. So yeah, he's great. Chris Northrup was the colorist for the first arc. He was fantastic in helping us establish the feel of it all, and timing didn't work out. We have a new colorist on the second arc, and Flavio Dispenza, he's amazing too. So, Chris came to us through Top Cow as well. The letterer, Troy Pateri, has worked in the business on a ton of stuff, and he came through Top Cow. So Top Cow provided me all the artists, but I didn't know anything about the production schedules or working to get the word out and working to get the book to retailers. And all the business side of things and the marketing sides of things and the production, just producing a comic and the process of working with the artists and all that. So, it's been trial by fire, but it's been great.
I was looking at your website and I have to point out the fact that the first issue came out on September 7th, 2016.
Yeah.
But then it was a little over a month later, your second printing of the first issue came out.
So initially we were slated, Wayne, as a 4-issue miniseries. That was it. And when issue one came out, it did very well. I think it was maybe Top Cow's bestseller of the year, and it sold out within 5 days.
Wow.
And this was my first comic, mind you. So we got some crazy press. I mean, we were on some lists. There's all these different websites that do like the best comics that you've got to get. And I think that we were on like an IGN list with like Star Wars and Walking Dead and Eclipse. And it was just a very surreal, I don't know, something about the concept because people hadn't read it. Something about the concept really just, I think, captured a lot of interest. And we got a ton of interest and press. And so it had a very strong opening and it sold out. And so they went right to second printing, which is something that happens a lot for Image books, but being my first book, it was not expected. Mm-hmm. So they gave us the green light right then to keep going. So then they transitioned to be an ongoing series, and we didn't even wait. A lot of Image books have a skip month. Mm-hmm. And we took one skip month, but we didn't take two, and we went right into issue 5, mm-hmm. and now we're in that arc. So yeah, it's been a crazy ride. I can't believe it was only last September, but there was a second printing of number one. Yeah,
it's pretty cool because not every book does that. So, you know, on some levels, yeah. You've been real fortunate because I'm helping out with, and I interact with a lot of indie creators who don't have the top cow expertise available to them. They have to go out and find artists. And they have to dig around and search for people on their own and things like that. So you've been real fortunate in that way. And I think that's kind of cool.
I have been, yeah.
It's probably encouraging to people who don't have those abilities available to them, that there are some folks who get that, who have a company that will come and forward and say, well, we'd like to do this artist. Your story makes us think of this artist.
Yeah, I mean, Top Cow is a great publisher, and I know there's a lot of other small press publishers out there that do that kind of stuff, and I guess it's a bit of a luxury and certainly a wonderful opportunity to get the chance to work with a publisher of any size.
That's cool.
And it's great.
Especially your first book. That must have just blown you away.
Yeah, I got a little lucky in that opportunity, so I'll take it.
Well, it says something about the quality of the story. That's why, like I said before, I don't believe it's your first book.
Thank you.
It's really very well put together.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
And the humanity with the sci-fi aspects are really good. You know, one of the great things about Star Trek and other science fiction is that we understand and identify with the characters. And I think you've done something along those same lines. We've got a sci-fi basis going on, but we also understand the people, and I think you guys did such a great job of portraying the situation that we understand the kinds of things that they're going through, and we can relate to it in the sense that, you know, gosh, I would hate to go through something like that.
Yeah, I mean, that was very important. I always wanted it to be a very grounded kind of idea, and I wanted to really stay with the kind of human experience of it all. So, I mean, the main character, I won't spoil everything too much, but the main character has suffered some tragedy in his past, and he's typically withdrawn because of the experience. And then he ends up getting brought into this case, I guess you could call it. And this killer, his next target is a young teenage girl who's the daughter of a wealthy solar industrialist in this world. It's kind of ironic that the society is both fearing the sun and yet they're surviving because solar power has become very prevalent here. So it's kind of an interesting juxtaposition. But the daughter of this guy is the next target. And so our hero finds himself protecting this girl. And one thing I really had a lot of fun doing was just showing the generation difference between, well, what would somebody who maybe was too young to remember what it was like to go out in the sunlight. So, you know, you have one guy who's nostalgic for the world that was and it feels a little beaten down by his current situation. And then you've got the youth that doesn't see it the same way. They don't remember what it was like to go outside. So she's kind of a wild spirit who doesn't seem to get it. And so it was a lot of fun just to kind of play around with those kinds of points of view. And yeah, I like to keep things complicated in terms of like the characters, where they're coming from and the dilemmas and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have to say, of course, you mentioned there's a murder mystery going on, and I was really surprised when I found out what was going on in the fourth issue. I'm a longtime murder mystery fan, and I love nothing better than being surprised. If I can tell in the first issue who did it, I'm like, shoot, I don't have to read the rest of it. But with yours, I was on every page going, man, who did this? Who did this? So it was really well put together, I thought. I like the way you did that.
Thank you. I don't want to reveal too much because the first issue ends with a really exciting moment and an exciting kind of hook as to this layer that's going on here. So, yeah, it definitely hooks you in with a very interesting question about how the killer is doing what he's doing, but I will leave it there.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to also talk about the colors because the use of color fits the tone of the story real well.
Yeah.
There's bright yellows at times, but on the rest of the time, everything is kind of subdued colors. You mentioned that being in Times Square, and Times Square is not as bright and happy as it would be for us.
Right.
It's very dark, kind of. I mean, when I first looked at it, I went, ooh, you know, because right away I got the sense this is going to be sort of a dark feeling story. And so I really liked that about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it is kind of a dark story. I mean, I was always going for a very desaturated look. So, you know, we wanted the colors really to be, especially when you're outside, everything's baked out. It's almost monochromatic. You can kind of look at something and it's tans and it's browns, and there's really not a lot of color, which kind of makes it feel like there's not a lot of life. Like everything has been absorbed by the sun and it's very hot. Page 4, we've got this really cool effect. We wanted to kind of capture that kind of mirage effect that you see when you're looking down the horizon of a hot highway, just to kind of give the feeling of the sun is so dominant in this exterior world that it's kind of creating this heat. And then once you're inside or underground or in this kind of world, we wanted it as, there's a dystopian feeling to the whole thing. So we wanted muted colors. We didn't want it to feel very vibrant. We wanted it to feel kind of worn out. So yeah, Chris did a great job with the colors for sure.
Because the yellow, for example, I would expect if there's bright sunshine, it's a richer, fuller yellow. But it's actually this sort of pale, pastel kind of look to the yellow.
Yeah.
And I just found that so interesting when I looked at it, because I said, one would think with super bright sunshine, it would be so bright yellow. But instead, there's this pastel kind of feel to it, which tells you that even the sun, and being that bright, it's still something dark to it.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good way of articulating it. Yeah, I don't know. I think bright suns of one shade convey happiness, and so it's a really fine line. You've got to find something that says the sun is strong, bright, but also depressive, you know, and so that required to take out some of the vibrancy and have it just be this kind of, like you say, this pastel kind of yellow, is a little more baked out. So, yeah.
As you said, there's lots of detail in the artwork, which I thought was good. My always thing is the battle between facial expression and action.
Yeah.
And yet I felt the two of those really went really well. There's a lot of movement going on, I want to say, and at the same time the facial expressions are pretty strong too, so I was real happy with that. I just thought that that kind of thing, not every comic can do that really well, but I thought yours did that superbly.
Yeah, I mean, that's a real also testament to Giovanni. I mean, I was definitely writing all this out in the script, but there was a huge amount of collaboration, and we really got into it, and we would spend a lot of time, what if this was 5 panels and what about this? And oh, we should get closer. Let's make this one. I think, you know, it was a passion project for both of us. And so some writers give an artist a script and they're done. And neither one of us wanted to just leave it there. You know, we would go back and forth and I would say, well, what about this? And he'd say, what about that? And so he did a great job. He's great with faces. He's great with action. I'm writing these very elaborate chase sequences. I'm visualizing the characters and interacting with their environment, interacting with an elevator or with the streets or a train station. And there's a lot, I'm thinking about the complexity of an action sequence and throwing all sorts of stuff at Giovanni, and he was able to capture it all beautifully. So, yeah.
Great book. And I have to say, I was glad I got the trade, because there's a section at the back, it's called A Peek Behind the Scenes of the Creative Process of Eclipse, in which the two of you kind of talk about, give comments on the different pages, as well as give character pages.
Yeah.
And descriptions, which are really helpful. I really like those kinds of things. I wish more books did that kind of thing. You even talked about the coloring process.
Yeah, and we actually did that in the issues, Wayne. Each issue had a little bit, and then we compiled it all at the end, and we've continued that into 5 through 8, and we've gotten a lot of fans really responding to that, which has been really rewarding. And yeah, we just wanted to, like I said, it's been a passion project for us, and we wanted to kind of open it up and share it with everybody and talk about some of the decisions we made and how we came up with the characters and how Giovanni and I worked together and why we made our choices and how the colors came about and everything. So it's been a lot of fun to share that with the readers.
Now, of course, the trade's out and the individual issues are out. If somebody wants to get this, the nice thing about yours is because it comes through the companies like that, people can go to their local store and probably order it through Diamond and get, say, the trade as well as the other issues.
Yeah, especially the trade is very easy to order. You can go to any comic book store and order it. I always am a fan of supporting the local comic book shops, but it's also on Amazon, on Barnes & Noble, on Goodreads, all of those kinds of platforms. Image Direct probably has it. And then the single issues have been sellouts. So retailers order a bunch and they go fast. And we're in the middle of the series, so they're not really doing second printings anymore. So I talk to a lot of fans who go to their shops, and if you wait a week, it's gone. So best way to, with the issues, if you want to get in and you can't wait, just pre-order. Mm-hmm. Tell your comic book shop to pre-order you a copy or to subscribe. Mm-hmm. Then you have it waiting. So yeah, issue 7 and then 8, and then they skip a month, and then the second volume is 5 through 8 will be the collection.
Let me ask you real quick, though, because apparently you had more than one arc in mind with the book, thankfully, because, you know, otherwise some people just have their one story, and then once that's done, they're finished. But you started off with Eclipse number 5, the second story arc. And as we were talking about, issue number 7 is going to come out on May 17th, which is only a little ways away. Yeah. So talk to me about the second arc. What is that story, basically? Again, that's a TV guide thing, so we don't spoil anything.
Yeah, the second arc, it was an interesting situation that I found myself in because, yeah, I had an idea for where the story could go, and I definitely wanted to tell more about these characters in the world, but I had to make 1 through 4 stand alone enough because I didn't know about the success that there would be an opportunity to do more. So issue 1 through 4 does stand alone, but for me, I didn't want to really take a procedural kind of element and have it be, you know, issues 1 through 4 is this murder mystery thriller component. And I found myself just much more interested in the mysteries that had yet to be solved and the aftermath of that experience and the characters and the fact, because there's still, if you get to the end of volume 1, there's still plenty of conflict that's left. And even though the characters have kind of solved the core case, there's a lot of mysteries and a lot of a conflict at hand. So volume 2, just simply arc 2, just picks up there. And it follows Bax as he goes out of the past the city's limits, and he goes out to face an old adversary out in the wasteland, and he is getting closer to solving the mystery of this killer. And the second arc, which was a lot of fun, was spend more time with Cielo, who's the daughter, the target in the first 4 issues, because she's definitely an interesting character, but she was the target in 1 through 4. And so now she's getting a chance to respond, and she kind of becomes a co-protagonist in a different way. She ends up kind of taking on the investigation too and becoming a detective of sorts and trying to solve some of the mysteries at hand. And so, yeah, it's kind of got a dual kind of stories that are playing out, and it's staying with the mystery questions that I'm sure if anybody read volume 1, they would love to find out more about. Mm-hmm. And it's got plenty of sun kills. There's lots of people getting burned alive by the sun, and it's a lot of fun. It's fast-paced. It's energetic. Every issue's got a cliffhanger that should hook you enough to make you go, oh, my God, I got to come back. And it's been a lot of fun. And we've gotten a really good response, so I think a lot of people enjoy seeing the world expand, both seeing the characters leave the city and also go to new places within the city that are kind of expanding the city's world. And yeah, I don't want to go too far in without someone listening, and I don't want to ruin anything too much.
Yeah, there's a little description in issue number 6 that got me. Apparently not everyone who goes in the sun completely burns up. So we'll have to read issue 6 to find out more about that, which of course
that's
means,
right.
Which is why I'm going to Comixology so we get here. But issue number 7 will be out May 17th. Is issue number 8 the end of the second arc?
Yeah, it is. So that would be April, June, the third Wednesday in June, that maybe June 21st. And then it'll skip in July. Image always skips before the trade comes out, and the trade will be out in August.
Cool.
And then we are looking at when issue 9 will come out, because Giovanni is going to get the opportunity to go draw something else pretty awesome. So I don't think that's been announced yet, but he is getting a chance at something cool. So 9 won't be coming out immediately after the trade, but it won't be too long before we get more out there.
Okay, that's cool. Because you got a lot of people sitting on the edge of their chairs now waiting to see what the heck's going on here.
I like it. Good.
Of course, now that you've had all the success and Eclipse is going on, well, you've obviously got more stories than just this one, because you're talking about issue number 9 coming. That's a whole other storyline, apparently. But what about other things? Do you have other irons in the fire that we might be able to see your name on sometime in the near future?
I do, but I am learning that comics is a very a business that likes its secrets too. And everything is very carefully timed and properly announced. Mm-hmm. And they like a certain amount of work to be done on a series or on a book before it's made public. And so mm-hmm. I do have a couple irons in the fire, but nothing that is official yet. So, but if you do enjoy Eclipse, keep an eye out.
Christian, you do have a website that we can.
I do. Yeah. I'm always tinkering with it. But yeah, you can go to zachcaps.com and look there, and definitely any major news or anything that's going on. I think it's a little outdated for a second, but I think I'm advertising 6 there. But yeah, that's always a good place to find me. I'm online on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook. Everywhere I'm on at Zach Caps. And yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. Because I'm real happy that good books sometimes rise to the top. And this is a case with your book. I think yours is one of those good books that deserves the attention it's getting and the success.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
So we're going to see more. And of course, TV scripts and stuff might eclipse someday Grace Sci-Fi or something like that.
That would be awesome. That would be great. I would love it as a TV show because I think the world is very rich. And so I think that would be an awesome thing. But we'll have to all just cross our fingers and see if it happens.
Because you realize Earth-based sci-fi is sci-fi. It used to be Sci-Fi Channel's big thing now. They don't want to spend a lot of time in space, although they have a couple shows that do that. Most of the stuff takes place on Earth. It's kind of a future Earth.
Yeah, you know, there's definitely a post-apocalyptic tone to this thing, but it doesn't require a lot of CGI. The sunlight burns people, so mm-hmm. I guess they could have fun with the makeup. There was somebody online, some makeup artist, who tried to fabricate the burnt arm that's on issue 1 on the single issue, and he tagged me. That was a pretty cool thing. But yeah, I think it would make an awesome TV show, and more so because I think the characters are really interesting, and I think, you know, when you're dealing with survival stories, there's a very interesting dilemma that permeates the story, which is, do you look out for other people or do you look out for yourself? Do you try to be a good person and connect to others and think about the greater good? Or do you try to think about yourself? And I think one is a hopeful point of view and one's kind of a fearful point of view. And I think that's just human nature, to trying to survive in a dangerous situation. And that's the world of Eclipse. And I think the city has never really, that I look at, it's never really been able to recover. It's kind of permeated by that dilemma constantly because there's always this danger outside. So I just think it's the kind of thing that has a lot of opportunities. So I think it'd be awesome if anyone's listening and wants to do a TV show. That'd be great.
Well, you know, you mention these things and you kind of hope that somebody out there is listening going, hey, you know, that would make a good show.
Yeah.
One of the things I mentioned talking with you about was to hook up with you and get these paper copies. And as I look over your website, you've got a list of upcoming events. It looks like I might see you at Heroes. That's right now in the beta. But I also will be out in San Diego Comic-Con this year. So what I'm going to have to do is track you down and get the books that I stupidly didn't pick up at C2E2.
Well, definitely I'll be at both of those. The next one's Comic-Palooza in Houston. I'm doing Heroes, Denver, San Diego, just signed on to Fan Expo Canada, which I'm excited about. I think I'm going to be doing New York. So, and there might be a couple others in there. I want to do Rose City. And so we'll see. But yeah, I'm going to be around. Definitely come get the papers. I'll have them. And, you know, I think, let's see, 5 is, I believe, sold out at Diamond. I think that sold out the Tuesday night before it came out. And then 6 might have a few left. You might be able to get a comic book shop to order 6 for you and order 7 for you.
Okay.
But you'll have to get 5 from me for sure. So,
okay. All right. Well, you know, I'm just remembering I might be in Houston too. I might see you a lot sooner than the other time.
So. Oh, there you go. Yeah.
I'll have to look you up and see. What kind of a booth do you have in Houston?
I'm in Artist Alley at Comic-Palooza. I'm not sure where I'm at on the floor.
I'll find you when you're there. Because I'll be around there someplace too, because I'll be helping out somebody who is an artist who's selling prints.
Come say hi. Yeah, for sure.
Eclipse is a terrific book. I really enjoyed it, and I can't wait to read more, and I can't wait to read the second storyline, because this first one really, it ends on a nice look forward kind of an event. Something happens to some of the characters that I really like. I always like a book that does that kind of thing, and your stories are really good, and I think the art's terrific. I just think it's going to be one of those books that I think we'll be seeing a lot more of in the years ahead. So I think, Zach, you're doing a terrific job. You and Giovanni, everybody on it, just keep up that wonderful stuff.
Thank you very much, Wayne. Appreciate it.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast, so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this week. Be sure to be back next time when I'll have another great interview with yet another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.